said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. I got my main boy, Brian. How you doing, baby?
Oh, man, you know, I'm doing good. I'm ready. I'm hot.
You're ready? You're ready? You're ready to talk underrated, another underrated Scorsese?
Is that what this is?
Are we not calling this an underrated Scorsese? All right, we'll save that. We'll parking lot that.
Let's table that. Let's table this discussion for later in the show.
You clicked on the link or whatever. You know we're talking about 1991's Cape Fear remake. But in the meantime, Brian, how have you been?
You know, same old, same old.
Same old shit, yeah.
You know, this is going to drop around or shortly after St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah.
And we always talk about stuff we've been watching. And I got the complete Leprechaun collection on Blu-ray. Broke down and bought it. I used to have the DVD of just the first three. Mm. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to spend the whatever it was, $18, and get the 6-7 movie, actually, because it also has
the Hornswoggle one.
The one with Hornswoggle in it. Yeah, yeah. But I'd never seen the franchise past three. So my son and I have been indulging in a little Leprechaun leading up to the holiday here.
I've seen them sporadically. Like, I've seen the first one. I don't think I've seen two. But then I've seen all, like, I've seen the two hood ones
mm-hmm.
and Space.
Okay.
I
had seen the first three, like I said. And the first one is maybe the worst of those three. It's quite bad. It has Jennifer Aniston, and it's quite bad. Two is, three is probably the best one of those three. It's the Las Vegas one, and it's got the girl from Chainsaw 2, and it's got some other, fun actors in it and stuff. But then, I had never seen, so I'm watching Space, and Space is real bad. Ooh, man, it's cheap. Everything looks cheap and bad. It's not a Jason X, it's not fun.
No, it's worse. It's
way worse. Like, I love Jason X is great.
It's a bad movie.
Yeah. And then also in the Hood, Leprechaun in the Hood, which is part five, also quite bad. Very cheap. Very, like, oof, bad writing, bad acting.
Well,
even Ice-T, who is, like, in between Surviving the Game and Law and Order at this point in his career, but, like, not inexperienced, terrible in it, terrible.
Oh, they're both bad. I mean, I think they...
I'm going to say this right now.
Is Angela Bassett up here briefly in that?
No, that would have been awesome.
Dionne Warwick pops up in...
I'm going to tell you this. I was ready to write the whole thing off, and I think, hot take, Leprechaun Back to the Hood is the best movie in the franchise. Part six, it almost feels like a real movie. Like, it looks like the budget, I don't know if they, like, got a little more budget or they just used it
better. I've seen better, both.
But it looks a lot better. It's got better acting in
It's a little slicker too. Like, I've seen both. I'm just
more like
mixing.
A real movie. It's a little, but like I said, this is not to say that I'm, like, highly recommending. This is still a trash franchise. And if it weren't for my love of Warwick Davis, I wouldn't even give the thing the time of day.
I think they're all very surface, on the surface, fun, like, beer movies in the sense of, like, throw it on, laugh at them. You can watch them with a pal. By watching, I mean, like, barely watch, be like, oh, that's fucking bad.
Yeah, that's kind of how me and Harrison have been watching them. But then we got the pleasure of watching Back to the Hood and being like, you know what? This is a step up. Yeah, this is better.
I feel bad I'd feel bad if someone went to me and, like, I intently watched all six and I, like, paid attention. I'd be like, ooh, ooh.
I'm here to discuss lore with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, like, no, I'm okay.
Don't do it. Don't do
I remember the first time I ever watched a video live stream watch along was back when, with pre you and I knowing each other,
Screen Junkies.
Screen Junkies,
right?
On break.com.
Yeah, they before did even a, before SJ Plus or anything like
did
that.
Did a live stream.
I was also watching.
It was
that.
Like Mundy was on it, and some of those other people.
Yeah, all the people.
And they were like, it was like drinking. I remember I was off of work. I got home late, so I had no St. Patrick's Day plans. I was like 24 or some shit.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, yeah, whatever, I'll do this. I remember I was like, I'll have some beers sitting in my parents' house in this chair watching. Like, this is a fun time.
And I remember, too, it's like watching basically in the middle of the day because they're in, you know, like aired at like.
Yeah, they were going to space. And it was the big, like, hashtag joke was it was hashtag gold member and then, like, dick birth or something like that. Like, those were two of, like, trigger words where it was like, if you see us say those things, I'm going to know you're cool.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, that is, I'll never not think of that specific thing with at least space, because space is, space has a Juana Man in it.
Absolutely it does.
And
I accidentally watched two Juana Man movies in the same night.
Oh, did you watch Friday the 13th?
No, it was a different, and now you're going to hold me to it. I'm going to have to look it up and figure out which one it was.
This is why I need you to get,
it wasn't memorable enough for me to actually remember.
This is why I need you to get on Letterboxd and not your Twitter thread of, like, now watching, because at least it's, like, logged.
No, I hate Letterboxd. For no reason.
No, you should. I think it's making us film fans worse, but I love it.
Well, anyway, I accidentally watched two Juana Man movies in one night.
That's
and it
funny.
Was weird. I was like, that guy again?
Nunez, Iglesias.
Miguel Nunez, yeah.
Miguel
exactly.
Nunez. Yeah, no,
baby.
I know myself.
Ooh, baby.
man. Nope, I really haven't picked up much. I mean, we watched, after we covered Nightmare, I watched, like, Nightmare 5.
I think my wife is watching Dream Master right now.
Yeah, like, I was like, all right, this is on, but other than that, not too much committed. Still on my MasterChef train, and when I'm not MasterChefing, I'm just going to the movies.
Yeah, I'm in the hardcore Sopranos mode, too. I've been on, like, a power rewatch.
Yeah, that's respectable, though. I'm watching a reality TV show, I'm like, ooh, Eggs Benedict, you really fucked that one up. I did see Dune 2. I know that's not horror, but it is viscerally like looks so amazing, and there are some moments in it. And I did love just my favorite part of it was the black and white, but not like just the color removed out of the frame shots.
Yeah. I like the everybody's mentioned it, but like the ink blot fireworks. That was that's a cool effect that I'd never really seen before.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw Dune 2 also. It was great. I was a big fan. I think it moves a little better than the first part.
It has such a good pace to it for how long it is.
Yeah, it was very good. It's like a shame that we won't get more Austin Butler because he was really excellent. You know, that's like
is what it is.
I'm kind of can I say that I'm a little embarrassed, but I kind of want to see the. Austin Butler, Tom Hardy motorcycle guy movie.
I don't think that's embarrassing.
No? Okay.
I think they're good actors.
I couldn't tell if that was an embarrassing movie to want to see.
I think it's a weird one to be like, you know what I'm really looking forward to? But
yeah.
I don't blame you. I'm on board. So you have my stamp of approval to.
I didn't see Elvis. I'm not interested in Elvis, but I'm not anti Austin Butler.
Shockingly, I really liked it. It's just that Baz Luhrmann style filmmaking was, if I remember correctly, it was like, yeah, too much. Like if you did the same performances and just didn't have the like it never. I think my criticism when we watched it last year was like it never took a minute to let itself breathe or being like, process anyone's like character. I just like, no. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. We don't need to do this for everything, Baz, but people love it. So I'll just jump right. We'll just jump right into it. So we're talking Cape Fear 91 today. Brian and I were talking not too long ago that it's a movie we both wanted to revisit. I've always really enjoyed this movie. I think I've always thought it's a great, it's always reminded me of like one of those great USA Network dad movies. Good thriller.
Yeah, I
good
can see thriller. That.
That's how I've always related to
that
it.
It feels, I get that vibe from it. Yeah, weirdly, I only ever saw this movie like one time, and it was kind of, it was right around the time it came out, and it was actually kind of a forbidden half watch, because I was staying at a hotel with my dad, and I was actually supposed to be sleeping, but I was kind of like turned over and like watching Cape Fear.
Sure.
So I didn't really remember that much about it, and then, of course, I had the Simpsons episode,
that's a big cloud, I think, over...
Well, you realize that this was it doesn't feel that way now. Like, I don't think it's remembered this way. But at the time it came out, it was a very big deal. Parodies on Seinfeld, parodies on The Simpsons, parodies on lots of stuff. Ben Stiller Show at the time did a whole bit on it.
This movie was like, really parodied, especially with the score and then De Niro's stuff. Well, no, that literally episode called Cape Fear.
Oh yeah.
I assume that you never saw the original. I've never seen the original.
No, I've never seen the original either. And I wanted to ask, because that's like, I didn't want to taint my viewing by watching the original, but then there are some stylistic choices that he makes in this that I feel like are possibly references to stuff from the original.
I think
because they feel a little like old timey or a little out of place, you know.
So the original. I know way too much about Martin Scorsese.
It's all right.
Is one of his like favorite older Hollywood films. And he didn't really want to make this, but it's known as like the famous Spielberg Scorsese swap. Spielberg was attached to make this movie, and he wanted to go make Schindler's List, and he essentially said, "Hey, Marty, I think you're more suited to make this movie than I am." With a little, and this is the way Scorsese worked for years and years. It was the, you do one for me, I do one for me, you. One for
them. Yeah, I get
so
it.
So this, I believe, was still tied into, hey, you owe us for Last Temptation of the Christ. Can you do this movie, and then they gave him like Casino afterwards.
Yeah, and I could see that, like, that does, I mean, I get that he enjoys the original, but that also makes sense that there's a little bit of a hired gun vibe to this one.
Oh, because it's very much, I mean, there's some, like, for, like, a big studio movie, and it is.
Yeah.
There's some artsy shots and choices and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's his most commercial, at the time at least, commercially hired gun. I'm making this movie to fund my other movies, and I'm going to give it the justice.
Well, this would have been right after Goodfellas, right?
Right after Goodfellas.
The next movie, yeah.
This is 91.
So he's coming in pretty hot.
Oh yeah, he's top of his game. I think there's the two big influences on this movie. This is not original thought. It's Scorsese doing a Brian De Palma movie in the style of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, I could see all that. That makes sense.
And I think those two guys, even though Buck De Palma's his buddy, are like, you know, the same Golden Hollywood or New Hollywood, I think they're called. New Hollywood era. Like, there's clearly like the shots of the face and someone in the back. That's just Brian De Palma. That's straight from a De Palma shot. It's funny we mentioned parodies. The first things as a tween, like 12 or 13, me and my friends ever shot. I wish I still had this. I could almost remember it shot for shot. It's fucking hysterical to me that we did this, and also really fucked up. We had a camera that filmed, I would say, like a picture, a digital picture camera that I would say probably filmed 20-second clips, and you load a floppy disk into it. I'm just telling, giving you how like old new tech it was. Like you could, like it had a screen kind
of one of those in between stages. Yeah,
like it had a screen on the back where you could see, but but its memory card was just a fucking flop. So anyway, me and a friend, I remember we were in basement, we were starting to like film things and video edit like a little bit. We made like a 30-second. Which I guess would be like a TikTok or Vine these days.
Sure, yeah.
Cape Fear parody, where I was doing, we had a chin-up bar in my basement. I had to have been 13 or 12, doing chin-up bars, and on my scrawny body, I think we drew like a bad like cross with like a Sharpie, and then like maybe like dicks or something like that. Like something real like, and then going to my friend and just, and it also for anyone listening, not understanding the scope and weight of like the rape and the sexual assaults of the movies, like thematics at that age too much. Like mimicking mostly in this parody, me just going, my friend stroking his cheek and saying, like, I'll be the big bad wolf. But like, you know, what the fuck? I wish I had this somewhere.
Yeah, that relic that deserves to be seen for sure.
What were we thinking? What were we thinking?
It's good stuff, honestly.
It's like I said, three of us, 13-year-old boys, in like probably the span of like 40 minutes, being like, haha, this is gold. Going on our Windows computer, be like chopping it together.
We nailed this. All and like high five it.
Bad Southern impression with my, you know, my voice through puberty. I'll be the big. I think it was some. It was. I almost remember it shot for shot. It was all very.
Wherever you are.
Oh, that's a good one. Shot so dark, like you know, because those cameras, there's no like a light.
Like it.
You know, probably the pixels are probably like that big.
It looks like it was shot with a Game Boy.
Yeah. I swear my friend uploaded it up at the time over to our YouTube channel, but I have since looked for it. He must have removed it at some point in 17 years. That's probably how long ago that was. Anyway, real quick, I'm going to run out some fun facts.
Sure.
Because I actually think this movie has some really good like filmmaking shit that happened in knowledge. That one of the creepiest scenes of the movie, the auditorium scene, was actually supposed to be a chase scene, but they rewrote it to be a seduction. The craziest stat, and this is where I'm like, wow, method acting sucks, and Robert De Niro, you're an insane person. Because remember, this is a paid for hire studio movie. This should not be an awards. This is
This ain't art.
This is an elevated B movie.
Yeah.
De Niro paid a dentist $5,000 to make his teeth look subtly bad for the role of Max Cady. After filming, he paid $20,000 then to have them fixed. Like, he had a dentist chip his teeth, essentially. That's to be like, make me look a little poorer.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Let's stop.
And then had him fixed. Like, you're a, what are you, a crazy person? Well, you're a goddamn crazy person.
All I got you was one, like, you're like fifth Oscar nomination at the time.
Yeah.
This movie also gained an Oscar for Juliette Lewis, which I found kind of surprised. Not surprising.
Yeah, we can talk about that right now if you want to. Because sure. I got a weird, there's a weird thing going on with Juliette Lewis's performance in this movie.
Yeah, you could bring that right up. I just thought it was odd because I was like, oh, like, of all the things we're pulling.
Well, like, first of all, the age and everything makes this feel Christmas Vacation adjacent, which is weird.
Yeah, she's supposed to be 16, and in Christmas Vacation, she's about the same age. Yeah. But she was just in Natural Born Killers.
Yeah.
Or like a year or two off.
I understand they had to cast an older actress because of some of the sexual elements. But her acting, her performance is like a little, it goes a little too far in the childlike direction.
She's a little too like a girl. Like
a little
girly,
too naive, a little childlike, girl. Which makes her seem like maybe she's a little mentally handicapped.
Yeah, there's a lot like of conversation of like her like being misbehaved in school and like kind of, so like, I never read it that way, but most of my notes towards the end of the note-taking of this movie are just like, how fucking dumb are you? You're the dumbest character on screen.
Well, a lot of this, a lot of that, and we're going to get to it, but a lot of that will be laid at the feet of Nick Nolte.
No, I'm not, like, disagreeing with you on that.
I think it's very interesting that her performance got nominated for this.
Yes. No, me too. I was like, huh. I didn't look who else was that year. So the other...
You're honestly, like, sorry about fucking Robert De Niro's thumb. Here's an Oscar nom for you.
Ugh. And you don't even watch that with his method acting. The other thing I thought that was interesting, and I actually don't think any of these guys would have... I think De Niro's the perfect choice.
Yeah.
But the four guys that are listed, I also think would have nailed this role. Nicolas Cage, I actually think would have been too young at this point to do this role. Willem Dafoe. Brad Dourif. That would have been so inspired.
Come on, Brad Dourif is like a cheat code for this role. Like, and, that's like too good.
Well, the other name is a cheat code too, like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Because he's also kind of doing a Shining. He's kind of doing a Jack Torrance-ish at some points. Bob Robert De Niro is.
Sure, yeah.
But anyway, those are like the fact. When I'm looking through the facts, I was kind of like, hold, I thought they were somewhat interesting. But then our little synopsis is when attorney Sam Bowden knowingly withholds evidence that would acquit violent sex offender Max Cady of rape charges, Max spends 14 years in prison. But after Max's release, knowing about Sam's descent, he devotes his life to stalking and destroying Bowden's family. When practical attempts to stop Max fail, Sam realizes that he must act outside the law to protect his wife and daughter in Martin Scorsese's remake of the classic 1962 thriller. That's pretty accurate, except for that last line, I think.
Well, also, it's funny that they get right to the heart of
some of the stuff. A big reveal in the movie.
Yeah. But they also, they're like, flat out like, oh no, this... And the movie does it, too. They're like, this evidence would have gotten him acquitted, when it's like, should we talk about why that's bad?
Like, yeah, we should talk about why that's bad. So,
they're just like, that's just they just state it like a fact. Like, oh, no, she would have gotten off. He would have gotten off because of this.
But then it's redeemed at the end, though, where Nick Nolte's like, that doesn't matter.
We can talk about it when we get there. But I do like the movie does take its opportunities to make sure they know where they land on it. Mm-hmm. They're just presenting the reality of the world at the time this movie came out, and it just happens to suck.
it's not like a, ooh. The law would have helped. Anyway, so the movie starts off with, I really like this movie. I'm going to give it criticism, but I don't like how it starts off with Juliette Lewis's VO.
I thought you were going to say, I don't like how it starts off with a title sequence. I was like, man, I do not miss this. Like,
it's a long,
drawn out title sequence. And like,
well, kind of part of it, right? There's no need for it. We could go right into it. The movie does unfortunately have,
and that's just in general, I don't even say it's not just this movie, just in general, I'm like, I don't miss that about movies. I like the movies just kind of get into shit these days.
No, this, it's like, this would value from a, like, I wish De Niro took the same shotgun filmmaking he wanted from like Goodfellas, where it's like, we're going to start off and just never want to stop.
Yeah.
For at least the start of this movie, because it is more of a slow burn, but it does plateau a little bit at a certain point.
But I agree about the Juliette Lewis voiceover, too.
It just never clicked with me. I'm like, but we never return, because we never really return to it. It's like,
well, it's only like, the very, very end, literally the end of the movie.
The end of the movie.
The bookend with voiceover.
And it's just supposed to be like, so... In my mind, we're watching this movie as her telling us her summer book report to her class.
Yeah, and like, does she put in all the stuff about like Max Cady sending her the sex book and stuff?
Yeah. Does she put the really intimate details of like him biting a woman's cheek off?
Yeah, or like, what about the part with his parents, her parents' sex scene? Did she put that in there?
Like, it to me, it just frames it as such a and to end it. I don't know. It's a choice. Maybe yeah. that's something. Maybe that's something from the remake from the original. But anyway, I do like one thing. I do really like about it, though. We're talking about how it starts off that way. It does immediately get into like. For the most part, that meet cute, which is a weird way to phrase this, of, you know, here's Nick Nolte, here's Robert De Niro. You get there quick.
You get to see, you know, you see Max in doing his Sarah Connor workout program.
With all the tattoos, it's become iconic.
It's so funny that there's a couple different times in this movie where the tattoos are framed in a way that you're supposed to be really shocked. And I'm like, that motherfucker just looks like Pete Davidson.
Yeah, they don't age. Like even when the Robert Mitchum, who's in the original, he plays the original he plays the original Max Cady, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he plays the like older attorney guy, and he goes, "I don't know whether to read him. I don't know whether to arrest him or read him." And it's like, there's not that many tattoos on.
No, and also like. Even the tattoos themselves aren't even like there's not even like big swastikas or anything really graphic. It's like pretty it's just like a bunch of weird sayings mostly.
Yeah, like, he's a religious nut. Like the movie really makes it known.
They mentioned a couple different times that he's like a Pentecostal from, you know, he's like he's supposed to be a hick, he's supposed to be illiterate, mm-hmm. but he's obviously country dumb, like he's obviously playing under, you know, he lets people underestimate
he's truly
him.
Playing possum.
Right, he's like Columbo, you know, he lets people underestimate him so he can get the best of them.
And that's where, I mean, everything's explained out in the movie, that's where like Nick Nolte goes, oh my god, he's, you know, well, hiding the evidence, or not presenting the evidence, I should say, going, he was illiterate. No way he could have ever read that.
Yeah.
Like, it's always been known, like, I can get away.
And then you find out that he learned to read in prison and became his own lawyer and got access to all the evidence. So, yeah, that's what, they talk about it in the synopsis, but that's what the inciting thing here is that Max Cady committed, and it's not even in question that he committed this rape and a mm-hmm. battery of this 16-year-old girl. And I think maybe they even say she's 15 at one point.
I think it was like 16, but 15. And then even Nick Nolte even says, and he bragged about two others to him.
Right.
The time of the trial in like the 70s, like late 70s.
And the idea is that like Nick Nolte knew this dude was a fucking scumbag and he didn't give a shit. He wanted him to go to prison. And then some evidence came out that the girl who was raped and beaten was quote unquote promiscuous.
That's all.
That's all, just promiscuous, and Nick Nolte knew that would be enough to shatter the case, because, well, if a woman has sex with multiple partners, then she's asking to be raped and beaten. We all know that's the way the world works.
It's a fucking wild omission in the movie, but once again, I like the movie draws the line to be like, we don't think it's okay. Like
No. Well, and that's the thing, and Nick Nolte clearly thinks it's bad because he goes against it and he, you know, doesn't present that, he buries that evidence, and Max goes to prison for 14 years, which I thought was pretty optimistic for rapists. They don't long.
Well,
out he killed his cellmate while he was in there, so he probably got a little extra time for that.
Yeah, but they clarify that shit too.
Yeah.
Nick Nolte goes, I got you on less charges. He goes, I got you off for just battery.
That's true.
You know, you did 7 years under his watch, not.
But then, because he like killed his cellmate or something, he did end up doing 14 or whatever. Yeah, right?
Something that's such. There's such little like lines in that are forgotten. I mean, De Niro, he does. I mean, I do love the ham up of the Southern and the spewing out religious quotes and just being like,
I like the way he dresses like Kramer.
Oh, his outfits are amazing.
Awesome. So good. Fits, man.
Well, there's a thing about it too where like he dresses like a poor guy who thinks this is how rich people dress and buy shit are, like with the red red Jaguar convertible. And like the golf hats.
He got like an inheritance or something. He got out of prison and he got
30
grand. So he has a little bit of money.
Yeah. From, because one of, before I get, like, well, I'll get wherever. So one of my favorite parts of that too is like Nick Nolte immediately goes into, I know I fucked up, instead of trying to like be smarter than the guy, because he immediately goes, when De Niro calls him out on it, he goes, well, I'll pay you. How does $10,000 sound?
And he's like,
and De Niro's like, I don't need money, man. Like,
I'm also like, what happened to deny? There's an unwritten thing that hampers. There's a problem with this movie, and it hampers my enjoyment of it, and that is the fact that Nick Nolte is too stupid to be a lawyer who's like been successful for this long.
He's so dumb.
He not only is like makes bad choices. Like, I mean, the crux of the whole movie. So much of it could be solved if he was just honest with his family about who this guy was, what he looked like, and what he had done.
And he has no idea. It's not like the affair he's trying to have, or, you know.
He's not even having an affair.
No, I should say, rephrase.
He's basically doing a work flirt right
now. Let's just say this. Let's rephrase that. Because all there more things come out about that, but it's not like the emotional affair he's having where. Okay, maybe I'm going to hide that a bit. As you just said, there's nothing that this guy's doing that he has to lie to his family about.
No. Well, he never, like, both his family members have to meet this guy and then realize who he is. Why didn't you show him them a picture of him? Why don't they know what he looks like, what he sounds like, the car he drives? Like, he so shelters his family that he ends up putting them even more harm's way.
Well, it's like, comparatively, right? It's like, you know, in that movie, The Gift?
The Keanu Reeves one?
No, with Jason Bateman Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
And, like, you know Jason Bateman did something bad, and that's why he is not so transparent to his wife, but we don't know the whole movie of, like, what he actually and his friends did to Joel Edgerton to make him this weird guy who's coming back to stalk. Yeah. It's not like that concept where, like, yeah, I want to hide this because I'm so ashamed of what I did. It's like, you in the right mind were more, you were being more of a good guy by not presenting that evidence to the judge to get this guy locked away.
You did the morally right thing.
Yeah. And, like, you're a successful lawyer. We see your house. We see your wife. I want to know why. I'm a little pivoting a little bit here. I want to know why, and because it's a perfect choice, and how great, and I know The Simpsons, this is when the episode ruins it for me, the theater shot, watching Problem Child and Smoking Cigar and laughing maniacally. It is perfect cinema. Seen so much in both Sideshow Bob's and The Simpsons in that episode.
Oh,
and
there's actually, so many moments in this where, like, you can't help it if you, like, are a Simpsons person, and that's what made me put my Troy McClure shirt on. It's just like, I couldn't help but see the moments in my mind. That and the one from Seinfeld with Uncle Leo doing the, where he's doing the pull-ups. And, Jerry! Hello!
But why Problem Child? I want to know what was there. You know, there was some thought there. It is still at the end of the day.
It's more probably, you know, it probably is just, what is this, a Paramount movie?
It's probably just movies.
That's a movie that Paramount had access. You know, it was easy to use because they had the rights or whatever. It's probably as simple as that. Didn't matter what it was, you know.
You're probably more right. Like, the family's just out seeing a goofy comedy of the time. Yeah. Love that scene, and also how comedically big his cigars are. And you might disagree with me with this. A lot of the Letterboxd reviews of this were like, oh my god, this movie's camp, this and that. I don't think this movie is anywhere near what people are like, it's camp, or any performances are that way.
It's more of like what you're talking about, like De Palma, like the kind of like hyper real drama.
Yeah.
Like,
It's not.
I wouldn't call it camp.
No, that bothered me. As just like, if I'm like, oh, it's not like De Niro. That's who you'd pull from camp. But he's giving a really good performance in the world of this movie.
He's believable. He's scary. He's terrifying. Like, real, like.
I it also made me laugh at this watch and putting down too of Jessica Lange's performance is. Every line, everything is. Why is she always seductive? Everything.
I wanted to know what was going on with her subconscious lipstick putting on. Like,
yeah, that was a.
There's a weird, like, like, they give Max Cady this weird kind of, like, hypnotic power over the women in Nick Nolte's life, but they, I don't know if they do enough to earn that, like.
Because their first meet, right, they meet once. Katie,
even before they meet, he's just lurking outside the house. Remember, she like wakes up and she puts on lipstick and she goes and looks out the window and he's like sitting on the wall.
Then they
kind of run around and he's gone. And then she realizes she has the lipstick on, like she didn't remember putting it on.
Yeah, I'm just kind of
like, I could understand that if that happened after they had met, but it was before they met because that's immediately why it struck me.
I'm gonna try to connect dots here that might not exist.
Sure.
I never saw that as a thing with Cady around. Potentially that could just be how later in the movie we learn, you know, he did have an affair at one point in this, and that could be her being like, you know, I slept with my husband. Things are good. I want to make myself look nice and stuff for him, and just. I don't know, something hypnotic
feeling
about nice it.
And feeling sexy, and then
yeah,
like,
but
and then the you know the whole seeing Max Cady thing kind of breaks that for her or whatever.
Yeah, well, that scene's also more of like a stylistic. It's beautifully shot with the fireworks in the background. How are they sleeping? There ain't no noise machine running.
Those things are not only going off constantly, but like they're so close that like they're shining in the window.
Because with that scene itself is like, okay, they've had three. Because fireworks don't go on for 2 hours straight, but like.
Not usually.
Do they have a 3 minute sex sesh, fall immediately asleep, and then it's only been like 15 minutes of firework?
And then they wake up and the fireworks are still going, but it's only because it's only been like 15 minutes.
But like, you know, they probably were intimate more than the couple minutes. And then it's also another of my favorite movie tropes is sleeping right after sex.
Immediately.
And it's like, you guys don't like hang out, be like, that was fun.
No, I don't actually. I fall immediately asleep.
Oh, well.
Sometimes I don't even have my pants pulled up.
Wow. I feel bad for everyone's wife.
You should feel bad for her for way more reasons than that.
No, you're my podcast wife. I can't feel bad. I'm your podcast wife. I can't feel bad for you. This like first half of the movie, or first quarter of the movie, like a lot of that interesting stuff happens, right? They have their meet. Nick Nolte does multiple times very much like, what do you want? Get away. You're good. Yeah. And he's very dismissive, like, he doesn't want to go back to jail. He's this, you know, it'll be fine. The cops are like, we can't do anything about him.
We have that classic horror thriller thing where, like, the pet mysteriously dies.
Yeah, it's
And it's
so
like,
cheap.
Max Cady's doing a lot of stuff to, like, kind of anti. And this is, again, falls into that thing of, like, I don't feel like Nick Nolte is. He jumps too quickly to, like, he doesn't. The movie doesn't give him enough time to, like, try more. He needs to try a few more, like, normal things before he just, like, flips out and pushes him at a parade or something. You know what I mean? Like,
well, even the I like that parade scene a lot.
I like it, too. I just don't necessarily think they, like.
He goes from zero to 100.
He didn't feel like he had exhausted his options so much that he would be lashing out like that already, I guess, is what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like,
I think he needed to, like. You need, like, a scene right before there of. Of one more thing wrong in the house. Because really there's only been two things. The dog, which is a big thing. And, you know, they keep mentioning that piano wire. Which does get a great payoff. But.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. I could see that, Brian. I could see that definitely.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not like a huge thing or anything. It's just one of those, like, I feel like it speaks to the problems I had with the Nick Nolte character, which is like he's supposed to be smart and successful, but he doesn't feel he feels like he doesn't think anything through. He doesn't think like Max Cady's constantly getting the one over on him, and I'm like, I just feel like the playing field should at least, I know that he's supposed to be underestimating Matt Skaady, but after like the second or third time it's proven that you shouldn't do that, maybe you should stop
what scene do we want to include there that gets him to that point? Like, yeah, what is something that...
Like, I don't know if you reorder the scenes that already exist to move some things around, or if you need a new scene to
I think a better way to do that would almost be to take the reordering and taking the Juliette Lewis stuff and putting it in a little earlier.
Well, that would also give it more time to build. I thought that was part of the problem. It felt a little rushed, the stuff with her. So if you did that, yeah, if you had, like, the seduction of Juliette Lewis a little earlier, especially, like, before they're wary that something's going on. Like, had a pre-existing relationship with this new drama teacher, even before stuff starts breaking off. He finds out, on top of the dead dog stuff and all that, he finds out that the new drama teacher is also Max Cady, and that kind of brings everything to a head. That would be cool. I like that. Because
you could do an easy thing of, like, him in front of the school or something, and then Nick Nolte pick up and, like, and her be like, oh, like, that's just my drama teacher. And, like, you don't have to see anything. You could just be, like, a wave of, like, hi, counselor. I could get on board with that. You know, because I'll say this, so you get there, and the rape scene of his, like, not mistress is probably one of the tougher movies to watch.
I don't know about you, but I just fucking love Ileana Douglas. Douglas shows up in anything, she's got one of my favorite moments in. Have you ever seen Kevin Bacon movie Stir of Echoes?
I have not.
She plays like the kind of like sort of psychic-y friend or something of his wife friend or maybe sister of his wife or whatever, and he's flipping out because he's seeing ghosts or whatever's going on in that movie, and he calls her and she comes over to or something, and he's trying to like talk to her, and she's like, okay, I smoked a joint like 5 seconds before you walked in the door, and you are freaking me the fuck out right now. And it's just so funny because it's been so dramatic, and he's like flipping out on her and telling her all this stuff, and she's just like, all right, I need to be straight with you.
No, I gotta watch that.
It was like right around the Hollow Man, Kevin Bacon kind of rebirth era that didn't last very long, you know, and they kind of went away again.
Understood. No, she's always
Little ghost story. I really like Stir of Echoes.
She's always a delight when she pops up, and at this time too, like, I'm looking at her IMDb a little bit. Scorsese was using her a lot, so he definitely was.
She's in Goodfellas, obviously.
That's where I immediately
she's like Joe Pesci's girlfriend in Goodfellas.
She's in Goodfellas. And her second role is a crowd member in The Last Temptation of Christ. So, like, literally, first six movies between 87 and 91 or three of them are Scorsese, as in some capacity. So, but she's great. I remember from, I'm trying to look honestly what I remember her from.
That's all right.
She's always enjoyable.
She also is on Seinfeld, much like the parodies we were talking about.
Yeah, very recognizable. That's what I fucking know her from. She's in a great episode of Frasier.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
That's what I'm... anyway, but her scene, that whole build-up and scene, it is incredibly hard to watch. It is film, and I know that's the purpose of it. Like,
well, it's like you're in that situation where you know what Max is capable of and what he's probably going to do, and you're watching her not take him seriously.
No, she just keeps laughing because she's just like, "I'm getting drunk. This cute redneck guy is just going to fuck me."
And they're building that thing of like they're building in that so that she will feel later after the attack that she can't go to the police. They're building in that kind of victim blamey vibe to it.
And she does.
She like after the attack, she's like, she knows that she was drunk. She went home with him. All that stuff is going to look bad. Like she was asking for it. It's another time where it's like the movie is pointing out, like, we, the movie, know this is not good, but it is the way the world works. And honestly, still the way the world works.
Yeah. People are like, wow, and it's like he bit her cheek off. Like
that's the most brutal. I was like, when he spit the chunk of her face out, I was like,
everything else is gonna
Jesus.
Everything else is gonna heal at a certain point where she'll, you know,
Didn't show like a lot of graphic raping, which I appreciate.
No,
I
that would have been
show
too
us
much.
Like the rape is really graphic. I don't like that.
I just meant like the beating and like.
But yeah, the violence is very brutal and
that's what
in its
I,
own
like,
right. Yeah.
No, I don't think even at the end of the movie, it's like it's weird to say done tastefully, but like it's done tastefully, where like you could tell the filmmakers are not interested in that part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, with the end of the movie and in the boat with like Jessica Lange and Juliette Lewis. Like that's also not something it's all shot from afar. You can't see much. Like
yeah.
Which is worse. Like that one and that the both of like when your imagination fails, and that's probably I'm like, wow, that's so brutal. It's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre getting like, this is the most violent movie ever made. It's banned. It's like, there's not one act of actual visual violence in it.
Right. Yeah. Everything's kind of like off screen, off camera.
You're good.
Something moved in my periphery. Like a cat.
Yeah. This is one of those, you know, thriller horror that, doesn't spook you when you talk about like some others we've talked, but I get it. So this movie also does it features Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum, the original Max Cady, and was it Sam?
To be fair, Gregory Peck is like basically doing Atticus Finch, like he
shows up as a lawyer,
he's almost dressed like him and everything.
So, I'm gonna jump actually to right before that scene. When you're talking about Nick Nolte being dumb, that is my least like no one's this stupid scene of so all the time he's working with this like PI guy and this
Joe Don Baker as a great scumbag PI.
His scumbag, and he's playing this role great, drinking disgustingly Pepto-Bismol milk mixed with Jim Beam through the whole film. But guy keeps going to him, he goes, we could hire people. Honestly, for like nothing. He's like $1,000, three guys, you know, they'll break his legs basically. He'll never bother you again. Okay, I'm on board, you know, I'm on board. This also happens like what, right after Juliette Lewis's Big Bad Wolf scene?
Right, yeah. You have Juliette Lewis gets up, you know, the approach, and you know, it's a seduction we talked about, and he like puts his thumb in her mouth and he makes out with her, and she kinda like is hesitant but also intrigued. He talks to her like a woman.
She's very like
adult, and she's very innocent and naive, so that like works on her, of course.
Yeah,
and I have a note here too that's like, it's not necessarily hard to turn a teen girl against her parents.
No, and the movie's like that way, but also the movie consistently is telling us, oh, she's I mean, maybe I'm reading too, and it's like her parents suppress her sexuality and this is why she's like this. But at the same time, Jessica Lange also immediately goes, when she's like, what, you don't think I know about, I forget, it was like blowjobs or something. And yeah. Jessica Lange goes, I'm sorry, you know, like they don't, but like, that's the way she's playing it. Like,
yeah,
because other than that, the seduction doesn't work if she doesn't have that, like just this man's giving her attention. That's it. That's all it is.
Right, right.
But they have that, you know, they have that encounter. They talk about this play. She goes, I'm smart. I know you're not the drama teacher. You're that guy.
Well, also, your drama teacher probably wouldn't offer you a joint. And if this is a drama class, there'd probably be some other kids there. So, I mean, she's not really a rocket
scientist. Yeah, but, so after that, though, right, they find out. Brian's frozen right now, so I'm just going
to
talk through this.
To him while he tells her that her dad did him wrong, and maybe he's... But, like, I really feel like if you... Nick Nolte just sat her down and was like, he raped and beat a girl your age.
Honestly,
she was
even...
your age. Here's Nick some pictures of her beaten
in
face.
I was just going to say, like, Nick Nolte could literally go to his courthouse, take any criminal, doesn't matter, and be like, this is what he did. Lie. That's when I would lie. Like, this is essentially what he did. You don't need to see, like, it's fine. It's awful. Because, like, Max Cady is a evil, evil, great movie character. He does that, and then this is, they find out, right, this and that, because Juliette Lewis is an idiot.
Well, she tells him that she saw him, but she doesn't tell him everything that happened.
Yeah, but...
she's still kind of keeping stuff from him and, like, kind of secretly corresponding with him and stuff.
But she goes, he hires these, he goes, well, fine, we'll hire the guys, right? And nothing else has worked.
So he's like, yeah, the law, I've tried everything. We're going to just get some dudes to beat the shit out of him is what we're going to do. Yeah. Tell him to leave town or whatever.
Because earlier, one thing we kind of skipped over, like earlier in the movie, like the cops, they pick him up for nothing. And they realize like, wait, he's done nothing and we're doing this. Like you're.
Well, right. They try to blame the dog death on him, but they have no evidence, no proof. They have nothing.
It's truly like the cops.
So they kind of blow their shot on bringing him in. And now he's hip to it. He's aware and stuff. For it.
He's also been aware that the PI is following. I'm just kind of recap of like things.
Oh yeah, he makes the PI immediately. I love that too. It's like again, it's that country dumb thing. The like everybody underestimates Max. Everybody thinks Max is stupid, and just because he wasn't educated doesn't make him stupid. You know, like,
and he's real smart.
Scary smart.
But he picks a PI in the funniest way too. He orders him fucking lunch. He just orders him food. And sends leaves. Him food. Chomping one of those fat ass cigars and just was like, all right. And so my least favorite part of the movie, it's not that the guys are coming at him and trying to break his legs. And it's like the three most unintimidating men you'd ever seen in your life.
We got two pipes and a chain, right?
Yeah.
The weapons of choice are here.
Yeah. It's that Nick Nolte is watching it from like 20 feet away behind a dumpster.
And this is why Nick Nolte, again, he sucks and he fucks it up for himself because like he can't help but be the tough guy. He wants to be, I mean, Tony Soprano didn't exist, but, and I know I've been watching a lot of Sopranos, but that's what he wants.
He wants to
sit back and watch his boys take out his problem for him. You know what I mean? Like, that's his whole vibe here.
It's crazy, especially that, like, you know, De Niro is like, you know, he gets a few hits and then it comes back, just beat, like, straight up ruins these guys' lives for the rest of their lives. Truly.
I was saying that if this movie was made today, those are killing blows. A pipe to the head in a modern movie, your brains are coming out. Like,
yeah, that's true. But
they don't fuck around with that stuff anymore.
They fuck around, they run away. And he's like, you know, he knows he's over there. He's yelling for his name.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, Nick Nolte, how are you that dumb? That's a I'm home call. You wait for the phone call. It's done.
Also, you want to distance yourself from it. You want to not seem like it's related to this problem you've been having with him. Like,
yeah. But it does lead to, once again, like you said, Max Cady is smarter than everyone else. He finally gets a hold of the hot shot like lawyer that will be able to help with this case. It's Gregory Peck doing his Atticus Finch, and he goes, wait a minute, sir, I have a conflict of interest. He called me yesterday morning.
Yeah, I already been hired by Max Cady.
Genius. And then you see him, and you know he's beat up, but he's playing it. The case is thrown out, and it's like, you're lucky you're not the one being, you know, on trial. And then this basically escalates the movie to Nick Nolte, and
he sets a stand your ground trap. Basically, he uses his family as bait to set a stand your ground trap with, again, Joe Don Baker with the worst idea for alarm system. Even in a parody of this, I saw the little bear had a bell on it, at least. So when it moved, it made a noise. He's just sitting there staring at this bear that's supposedly tied to every window and door in the whole house. Because he could come in, he says, anywhere he comes in. But from what I can tell, he's got two strings tied to him. So
the bear will move.
We know that Max has been freely in and out of the house at this point. Like, you know.
And that's great. I think it's very, I mean, it's Martin Scorsese. Like, that's where it shines. Like, it's great filmmaking and editing around. Like, you have not had to show me that he's been at and out of the house.
Yeah.
You've shown us with little things without actually seeing him. It's that to me is like great tension, and like, you know, the movie is treating us, the audience, as a smart audience and not just being like, oh, the window was open one night. Like, it's the piano wire is really the only thing that's telling us. And like, but yeah, the reveal. So there's a housekeeper also, as a kid and even today.
Oh, scary great reveal. The basically movie. Dark Knight level reveal of Max Cady as the housekeeper is so good.
He's scary. He's a little, you know, he's like,
I kind of knew, looking at the housekeeper that they were doing, I was like, why is she the same height and build and hair length? That's a little too clever.
Yeah, but, you know, the PI, sorry, I'm blanking on names always.
I don't remember his name. I just know that's the actress, Joe Don Baker.
So Joe Don Baker, in the silliest way, is like, oh, just you there, Esmeralda. And then it's just like a turnaround of a fucking De Niro in a wig of like, all right, and just gets his throat with that piano wire. And then,
oh yeah, that's great. It's really good. This is also the moment where we're getting into the finale of the movie, but this is also when the movie goes full comedy, when they do the pratfall in the blood and him and Jessica Lange are like slipping and sliding around in a pool of blood.
It's so like, oh.
It's like, it's legitimately silly.
Yeah. It's like too much blood, and they're falling too much in the blood. And then they fucking run away.
They just bail. I love it. They just leave a corpse in the middle of the room. Like, nobody will have any questions about that. I'm sure you just blame it on that.
And he picks up the fucking snub-nosed gun, too, and puts his hands on it. Like, if you're a lawyer, what are we doing? Because at that point, I'd be like, great, police, what do you want me to do? Put me and my family in a safe house at this point. Not take a car to one of the New England capes and get on a riverboat.
Well, also, like, you think Max Cady's been studying and following you. You think he doesn't know you about your houseboat? I mean, we see that he rides underneath the car and everything. Even if he didn't. He probably knows you have a houseboat.
He's gonna be there. So that's right. Like, and I agree with you. That is very comedic of the falling of the blood. Oh,
the fall of the blood was
From such a heavy horror scene, maybe the heaviest of the movie, in like a horror.
Have them all be like, whoa, whoop.
Like, in a weird way, like it would have been better off if like. It was shot like the very bloody scene in Candyman where she, you know, she's like framed and it's brutal. It's not funny falling in blood. When Virginia Madsen's all in that in the apartment. But no, it is. But yeah, they're driving up to, you know, one of the New England capes, Cape Fear. But we do get that. It is a terrifying reveal. Of Cady is strapped underneath the car. I can't tell if Brian is frozen. Okay, what? He's awake. Oh, you're falling asleep.
No, I couldn't. My thing was going.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was like, oh, this
I'm froze up.
Oh no, you were good. But yeah, he's strapped to the car. Generally scary.
Again, all I could think of was Sideshow Bob and the Cactus Patch, and like,
yeah, there's. So there, they get on their houseboat, and, you know, we're in the finale on the river,
I thought that Juliet Lewis was over the thing now, because we had seen the murdered housekeeper and stuff at this point.
Should be upset about it, but
yeah, instead, but she still seems like it's kind of working on her to some extent.
Because the one thing, Brian, you briefly mentioned this, is like, he told her, I'll leave you this book of, like, the sex play or whatever.
Yeah.
And he does, but she doesn't tell anyone. She hides it.
it's while the house is all locked down for their big trap, but he's clearly been lurking around anyway. It's like not working
and
at all.
She keeps it to herself.
Yeah, but she doesn't, yeah.
But that before should be all wiped away because they make it clear. They're like, oh, what? You know, Danny, she takes flies outside. Like, she's just this pacifist, naive little girl. Like, nope. But. So he gets on board, knocks out, fuck, the storm's a brewing.
Ties up McNulty and then positions him in a place where he can see
inside
what he's gonna
he puts him in, like, helpless
to watch his, you know, watch what Katie's gonna do with his family.
The big deal of this movie, Maxwell Cady, is you're gonna learn about loss. It's not just, I wanna murder your family.
It's like, you took them these years of my life from me, I lost, you're gonna lose.
It's a terrifying concept, right? Someone in your past comes back and they're torturing. For something minor that you, or something inconsequential minor that you think it is.
Also, you got to imagine that Nick Dolte probably hasn't thought about this in years. Max Hayes has been locked up. He hadn't thought about this.
No, he's
now
had,
it's all coming back to haunt him, and he's probably prepared for this in any way.
Hundreds of cases, you know. But his plan is, I'm going to rape and murder these two women in front of him, and then I'm going to murder him. And this is like back and forth. The storm's going on. You know, Jessica Lange puts herself out there more to save her daughter.
Right. She's basically looking to sacrifice herself for her daughter's sake.
I do love the line reading of De Niro going, though, okay. I'm gonna put you in the hole. You go in the hole now, and it's just like underneath the boat. But it's like prison talk of like, you go in the hole. Juliette Lewis kind of somewhat saves the day as she hides lighter fluid, and
She tries to throw the hot water on him too, but it doesn't. Like, I love the way he no sells the boiling water getting thrown, and that's when he's like, that's the thing about like how he made himself more and produced his prison time to make himself more than human,
yeah,
and like
holding
so
the,
he can take all this punishment when like the three dudes were beating him with the chains and shit,
holding the road flare and that like oozes on him.
Yeah,
and
the
like,
burning shit is like oozing down his hand. And
he's
stuff.
Like talking about like his family lineage of like they endured pains. Nah, I think it's great. It's great crazy shit.
Yeah, good crazy guy stuff.
And he's doing that, and you know, Nick Nolte for the whole thing, which I do love about this ending, is he's incapacitated for the whole thing. He's really inconsequential to being the savior of the family.
It's kind of up to Juliette Lewis and Jessica Lange to like save him and themselves.
And gets the lighter fluid, and we get a pretty okay, especially at the time of like burning scene, and you're like, oh, okay, it's good, and they just gotta like. They just got to weather the storm. And I love how he comes back as this, like, demonic, almost Freddy Krueger-y
burn
victim.
Yeah, he's a full-on monster now. Like,
and now
he's, like, really transitioned into a creature. He does look like it's Frankenstein.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And he's reading those lines, and I love that actually shot I do love of him looking back at the camera that's supposed to be...
Doing the, like, prosecutor, talking to the judge or whoever, the jury.
Yeah, and going, what did you do? Oh, and he's like, not you. This... And just going back and forth.
This is where
you
get Nick Nolte standing up for what he did. I like, too, that he never buckles and is like, you're right, you deserved the same defense as everyone else. He's like, no, you were fucked up, and I did what I thought was morally correct and sent you to fucking prison.
Mm-hmm. And really, the storm takes
it
out.
And he does really hit the nail, too, of like, it doesn't matter that she was promiscuous. She didn't deserve to be real. Like,
no.
It does not. And, like, they actually say the words, which I got to give the movie credit for that. Like, they actually come out and they make a point of saying that sentence. Like, it doesn't matter that she was promiscuous, which I was really appreciative of.
The movie's social awareness ages very well.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there is still some, like, stuff, like we talked about Liliana Douglas and some other stuff that feels victim-blamey, but only because it's meant to portray the way the world is, not the movie. The movie's not taking that stand.
That's what I mean.
It's
the movie.
Showing you the way of the world, that both, like, again, both then and now.
And that's what ages well, because you're just like, that's what the world is. The movie's not trying to paint a picture of what the world isn't. You know, that... This is a weird comparison. Yeah, that behavior would be weird in, like, Barbie or something.
Sure,
right?
yeah, obviously.
Or another, yeah, honestly, probably even another fucking horror movie. Like, you know, that would be weird in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Right. But here, I think it ages well. I don't think you could walk away and be like, oh, 1991, pretty rough stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, the movie's supposed to be rough stuff. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. That's the horror. But no, basically, the real savior and what happens is the storm. The storm is the...
This boat takes more hits than the Titanic, man. This it takes a while to like bust river, the hull on this bad boy.
And what
They're
river
ramming
is...
into rocks left and right.
Yeah, like, what river is getting that... That
when the
swells.
Whole boat is like spinning around, I was like, where the hell are you? Is this the Amazon?
It's thematic. I don't know. But yeah, he has that. The women like are able to scurry away and they're like, we'll take our chances jumping into this crazy river and get into a shore patch. Respect.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But Nick Nolte's still on there because they're tussling, and there's this like there's a handcuff onto one of the things. Basically, you're gonna be handcuffed and drowned to death through the storm and the tussle and everything. Nick Nolte is actually able to get that onto De Niro's ankle, and you know they still are like on this ship, and things break apart on it, and just that piece is up there. It's again all very cinematic. Nick Nolte's away. He also gets the shore, and De Niro is now speaking in tongues, just drowning.
Yeah, I love that they brought back the speaking in tongues thing for the whole like Pentecostal angle, like as he's being drugged down by the boat.
That was my last fun fact, which I didn't read at the top. I was saving for it. It seems like he's talking in gibberish. I'm reading almost word for word. It seems like he's talking in gibberish, but he's actually speaking in tongues. Elated at the fact that he thinks he's ascending to heaven. So that's supposed to be what his character... He's finally seen his thing come.
Yeah.
And then
fail his missions. Does he get to go to heaven? I don't know.
Yeah,
about
I don't.
That.
I don't know. I'm just reading a IMDb fun fact. So we're.
I'm
really
just. Gonna... I'm just telling Max. Hey, man, you might want to not get your hopes up.
Yeah. You could have took your $30,000, lived a nice life. That's for the most part the movie. The family reconciles. Juliette Lewis has that line of like, we never spoke about what happened. Kind of weird. Please talk about it.
Yeah, you should talk through that, but that also is the way of like, you know, people, you're just like, nah, it's over now. If we talk about it, then you bring it all that shit back up. But
nah,
just
we're just gonna
it,
stay
it.
Married. And you're going to find a nice man who you're also not going to love at some point. And that's your life too.
Right.
But Brian, anything through this whole thing that like thoughts or things have pulled out that like, we skipped over or didn't cover or that you really want to highlight or, you know, ending thoughts, I should say.
No, not really. Like, I think overall, like, the thing that kept me from loving this movie is just kind of, like, some of the unnatural behaviors. I just feel like Nick Nolte's character, you wouldn't have had to change the movie to make him smarter and more, like, more purposefully reactive. And, like, same thing with, like, I just feel like the way they get away with some of the stuff with the way Katie gets to... like interact with the family only because they didn't do a very natural thing, which is that Nick Nolte would have told his family some shit. At least the dude's name and what he looked like, if not his crimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like it gets docked some points for that. But obviously, I mean, you know, I don't think this was Scorsese's best directing. Like, I don't think it's as good as Goodfellas, obviously, even stylistically. But he does try some things. And like I said, without seeing the original, I have to believe there's a few touches he does specifically that, like, references back to that.
Sure. Like there's an interest. Like, I think you talking to you about this definitely opened my eyes up to some of the criticisms, like, you have, which I find actually extremely fair and make me think. I've always really liked this movie.
I think as far as like that he nails all the like thriller stuff. Like,
yeah, it's a good thriller. It's
executed very well. And like, obviously performance has got the all-star cast. Like, none of that. My criticisms are all just in like the reason I couldn't connect with, with what the movie was doing. But like, I'm not trying to like, it's definitely a very effective thriller, especially for the early 90s. I mean, it, when you talk about it being like kind of a pitch perfect representation of a cable movie for dads,
it's like more, and maybe I'm just comparing it, like, I guess what my own dad had on of those movies growing up. That's right where it comes from. Like, it's like right there at being a better movie, but just the same tone, fun. Fun's a weird word for it, but like, you could have a double features like something like Hand That Rocks the Cradle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Or what's the one with Jennifer Jason Leigh?
Oh, Single White Female.
Single White Female. Kind Which of right that, in that kind of 90s thriller wheelhouse. Remember when we covered Arlington Road? Something like that. Yeah. You know?
And, you know, I find that, I find maybe, like I said, it's more of like growing up. Those are always those comforting movies. So one like this, I'm like, yeah, it's great. Like, I like talking about Letterboxd. You're like, of course I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. You know? I do think it's an underrated Scorsese, just in the sense that, like, it's a weak Scorsese that's still, like, a weak Scorsese, for the most part, is still a good to great movie for anyone else.
Sure. Well, it also feels like kind of a flare-up. Like, it had its moment, but then it was kind of immediately forgotten and kind of cast aside. Yeah,
no one's like...
And I think it's because Scorsese went on to do more work that was on par with Goodfellas, and like, had he kept being more of, if Goodfellas was when he peaked and everything else he did was more on this level, which was like good but nothing like that really like caught your attention, and he was just became more of like a workman, maybe this would be more
remember when he did this one
in his oeuvre or whatever. But yeah, he just breezed past this and went on making masterpieces.
I mean, we could just real quick go, you know, like, you have Casino, Age of Innocence, which is such a different departure, right? Kundun, I think, is in the 90s.
Kundun. Yeah, I liked
right?
it.
But that's in the 90s, I believe, right?
Yeah, mine too.
Then he kind of goes back to horror thriller, which is, I mean, not horror, like thriller drama, which may be something we revisit. It's a hard watch. Something like Bringing Out the Dead, right? It's just a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about Bringing Out the Dead.
It's a frantic look of an ambulance driver just, like, sleep-deprived and, like...
It has that last act of Goodfellas energy, like...
Yeah, I haven't watched it in about 10 years or so, but that's one
I've seen it since the theater. I think I saw it in the theater, but I don't think I've seen it since.
And that's one that's, like... less of a normal movie structure, more of like, we're doing an exercise in anxiety. It's like Uncut Gems, pre-Uncut Gems, right? Like, that's that, it's frantic. You know, yeah, and then we lead him right into the, you know, then we're swooping right back of, like, I'm sure I've skipped over some Scorsese, but like, Gangs in New York, The Aviator,
Hugo, right? Yeah.
Oh, but then we go to The Departed. Then we go Hugo. Then he's like, that's when Shutter Island. Like, yeah, then Shutter Island, which was another, which was really the last kick of the studio. I do one movie, then I'll do a movie for the studio, I do another one. He did Hugo, because now, I mean, his daughter, we all see her on, like, TikTok and stuff. She's a little older. But when she was at that age, he, as an old man, said, I want to make a movie that my kid could go see. But the only way I know how to make a movie is to make a movie about how great the magical world of movies is. And Hugo's great. I've had, especially this year with Killers of the Flower Moon and my Scorsese nerdom, I've had plenty of rants about, oh, no, he's a really diverse filmography of, like... Because, you know, people are like, it's the violence or these gang movies.
Yeah, people are like, oh, he makes his crime movies and all he makes is mob movies.
And I'm like, not really.
I mean, if you say that about him, you have to say it about the Coen brothers, you know, like.
So, you know, having I've said all of that, Cape Fear is this weird little blip of, like, right after Goodfellas, which should have been his first best director and best picture win, and not fucking Dances with Wolves.
That's tough. I know Dances with Wolves isn't as well remembered. That's still a fucking masterpiece.
No, I get it. I'm gonna
have to stand up for Dances with Wolves.
It's the King's Speech Social Network of the 90s.
For me, it's Crouching Tiger and Gladiator. It's
And that's all. The Oscars are, they mean nothing. I mean, literally someone saying Martin Scorsese has one Oscar and Billie Eilish has two, like, we're on serious.
Yeah. And dear readers or dear viewers, I know that's not to say that I necessarily even think that Dances with Wolves is better than Goodfellas. I'm just saying I wouldn't immediately discount that.
No, I couldn't just
blindly make that switch without some serious discussion,
And that is fair. I guess because I could keep ranting about just the history and timeline of this. This is a close movie of how Scorsese made movies to like when he made The Color of Money in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Tom Cruise, the sequel to The Hustler.
Yeah.
More than not a hired gun who was just by sheer talent is able to elevate it a little more than just, your typical thriller, but it's not perfect. And I think there's a lot of fat in this movie that could be trimmed down because it does.
It goes a full 2 hours and you could definitely tighten it.
It's like 215, 210.
Yeah.
Like it's the length that sat with me today a little longer than I wanted to when I watched it. I think everyone should include this in their, great thrillers of the 90s. It sits nicely with your Silence of the Lambs.
And I like when well-known directors depart from their normal, like, the style they're known for. Like I said, we talked about people do think of Scorsese in this one way, and this is a great kind of, like, something different that he did. And even just for that, it's worth the watch.
I don't want to see Martin Scorsese just because of how old his age, and we only have a movie or two left in him, I imagine. I don't want to see him tackle another horror movie or thriller. I want him to make the movies he wants to make. But if I were to look back, I would love to see one other like thriller that's of like a Shutter Island and Cape Fear sandwiched in this filmography at a certain point.
In the late 90s, early 2000s.
Or Bringing Out the Dead would be the other closest thing. But
That's not a terrible trilogy, though. Like, Cape Fear, Bringing Out the Dead, Shutter Island. That's an alright triple feature for Scorsese.
Yeah. That's like if we were to have a day, like, ooh, you're going to have a Scorsese marathon? What are you guys doing? We're
going to do something weird? Yeah,
what are you guys doing?
Scorsese marathon, let's do something weird with it.
Yeah, you guys go, you're going to do, like, Taxi Driver, and then, like, Goodfellas, and then Casino, or, are you going to throw Wolf of Wall Street in there? Nah, we're doing Bringing Out the Dead. I'm gonna have a nice snack with Kundun.
Yeah.
and then I'm gonna wash it all down with Cape Fear.
I've been telling myself I got Netflix back. I'm gonna get around to watching The Irishman. I really need to watch The Irishman.
Yeah, I have the Criterion of Irishman and Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah.
And I've been also telling myself, like, one day we're gonna sit down, we're gonna watch the story of Jesus.
That's right.
Told through Martin Scorsese. Oh, another great movie of his that's just real diverse. Silence.
Yeah, I've never seen Silence either. That's very good.
Quiet. It's very, you can tell it's personal. Yeah. But yeah, I could honestly keep going about my.
Of course, you love Marty.
My Marty love. But yeah, I don't think anything in the movie itself. I don't have any other final thoughts of it. Like, I also like that De Niro then replayed the same character over and over again in different lanes, just in less, like we covered The Fan and Flyover at one point.
Yeah, which that's true. He is kind of like this in The Fan.
Which is just like the trashiest version of this. There's others he did, especially later in like the 2000s when he was just post Meet the Parents. De Niro was just like,
oh yeah, cash those checks, baby. Paycheck, was it hide and seek? Hide and seek was a particularly bad.
That's
one
I want to revisit, not for this maybe purposes, but for like my own, like
just for your own edification.
Yeah, I'd be like, ah man, because those trailers. I was at the right age where movie trailers scare the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
When Hide and Seek was being advertised, I was at that right age where the TV was, I was like 11 or 12 or something. The TV was always on, but the trailers were just creepy enough. And I was like, what the fuck's that movie? anyway. But Brian, I think we've figured it out.
Call this an episode. Absolutely.
Call this an episode. All right, everyone. You know where to find us. We don't plug this shit anymore. It's here. It's there. It's everywhere. Stay frightful.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.